Okay, great. So what I want to do tonight is to touch on past lives, karma, and soul, and give you a kind of a brief summation of what is in the Soul's Journey books, those two books. Specifically, the first book, all the principles are laid out and explained and explored. And the second book is the intensive workshop format with seven brave souls. Actually, Jillian is one of those people in that workshop. And so I want to give you that, and then I want to get straight into the Pluto bit of the course. The way the course is going to be structured is we're going to do Pluto today. We're going to edge into the South Node next week, the South Node ruler by sign, and then the North Node. And for each of these, you're going to have handouts similar to the ones you got today. A basic one, and I'll explain why, and you know why I'm starting with the basic thing, and then an expanded one. So that's that's the structure for the first 4 weeks. The last 3 weeks, and we'll do practice along the way, but the last 3 weeks will be practice to put all four steps together and to start telling stories. So that's kind of the structure of the 7 weeks. The reason we're doing this, I'll just give you this note before we start. The reason we're doing the basic handout first, where it's just like a keyword or a phrase, is because what I've realized about how I look at charts is that there's a, you know, every person's brain is a computer, but when I look at a chart, I don't access the vast majority of those data. I don't work with all the things I've learned. When I look at a chart and I see Pluto's in the second house in Virgo, there's like this space holder for a giant story and all these possibilities, but I stick with the placeholder. You know, keyword for Virgo, keyword for second house. And I do that and I say, aha, this is a foundation, this is a soul's journey, person struggling to become empowered through that, there's a lot of wounding, blah, blah, blah. And then I move on, and for the other four steps, I do the same thing. And this, Sandy, who's not on the call tonight, but is going to be joining us, I think, off and on just because of her work schedule, she said, is this something that I can get from all the MP3s I have of yours and the books and all that and the podcast? And I said, no, because there's certain shortcuts. Not to make the material, you know, less important or anything, but there's certain avenues through complex material that I've come up with that's become apparent over the last few months as I've been working with some tutoring students. And it's like, you know, somebody calls me and says, I want to learn to see a chart like you. And I realize, oh, right, I don't use everything I could use. I don't know anything about the person. I'm just looking at the journey through this four-step process. So that's why we're breaking it down. We get familiar with making a really brief story out of the basics handouts each week, then we can go into and look at expanding the story. But what I find with people learning astrology is that their computer minds are full. They know quite a lot, but what to do with it? And when they find an approach that works for them, whether it's, you know, this karmic approach or a different approach, then they're like, well, what do I do with all this information in here? And so this whole course is designed to bring some big topics that are explored and explained in detail in the books and distill them into these and to make the process simpler so that you can use it more efficiently. That's our whole goal here. So anyway, that's the note on the handouts. You're going to have one for each week, and you can play with them during the week after we talk, and you can keep them obviously forever. And I think they're just good foundational, you know, tools to bring in to simplify the process of looking at charts. It's like even people who are very practiced, when you start looking at charts the way I do, if you want to learn that from me, obviously you're here, so you do, it's different. It's different from what Steve teaches. It's different from what other evolutionary astrologers teach. It's unique because it's been shaped. Like I took the skeleton of what Steve has done or developed that he teaches in the apprenticeship program, but isn't always reflected in the books. And I've taken that skeleton and shaped it because of the tutoring and counseling I've gotten from the Ascended Master I work with about what soul is. So this is actually a unique approach, which is why I'm giving you this, you know, basic approach, you know, that we want to start with the absolute basics to build it up from there. So I want to touch on a couple of things that are in those books, but I just want to get them out on the record for the record here. Soul exists across time. And when we do this evolutionary approach, we're talking about, you know, my life now as a chapter in this longer journey. In fact, that life, as Tom Jacobs, is a microcosm of a giant journey. So all the stuff that I'm experiencing in this life, my dilemmas, passions, and fears, are, you know, in common with a bunch of lives across your timeline. And all of those lives feed data back to Soul about what it's like to be a human. Is that concept make sense to all of you? Is that clear?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to make too many assumptions, but I'm hoping, you know, at least, like, I know that Mario, you just got the book today, and I think Tia just got the second, or the second one's on the way to her. But anyway, so I know maybe all of you haven't read the whole, you know, all the books, but I just want to make sure that concept is clear, because that's the foundation for all of this. So a past life, given what I just said, is actually a soul's other life. You know, your other life. So that I'm shifting away from that. And in the Soul's Journey 3, which is probably about a week away from being finished and launched, I make that really clear, because it's a case study of a bunch of past lives of mine, which I call my soul's other lives. And the reason is because I paint a picture of how this multidimensional thing is happening. I'm having a fear that's out of all proportion to my experience as Tom Jacobs. So how do I understand that? And maybe there's something elsewhere on the timeline where that fear is justified. You know, it's shaped because of an event. I fear it now. It's 2013. There's no reason to fear it. So this multidimensional approach is kind of an interesting thing and definitely unique. So these difficult experiences happen at different places on the timeline, and they are reflections of what the soul intends you experience to learn about being human. So as we get into this, like, you know, like a Pluto house, Pluto in the third, Pluto in the house of mind and education and perception, for you to be empowered through mind, you're going to have to also be disempowered, because the soul needs to learn both sides of it to really get it. Have to see, what does it mean to be empowered through mind? Well, having access to education, you know, learning the truth about something, you know, speaking the truth, aligning your voice with your moral center, something, you know, something empowering that has to do with speech or education or mind. But from the soul's perspective, it also requires being disempowered or feeling powerless about mind. So that's kind of the first thing about Pluto as we talk about past lives and karma here. We should assume that a person, when we're talking about Pluto, has experienced the best and worst. Another way of looking at it is there's a primary strength that the person underneath a bunch of fears is really good at, but the person may not know it or know how to own it. So as we talk about Pluto today and work with it this week, that's a core idea. The fears cover over the skills and the confidence. So all this work is about dealing with fears to uncover the confidence. Does that make sense before we do karma as an overview?
Yes.
Does that make sense? Okay.
You say to feel the fears to uncover it?
Well, kind of, yeah. We have to be aware of what they are, and that usually is happening through them coming to the surface and being apparent.
Okay.
So usually, yes. Which is why Pluto stuff is often a drag, and why it gets a horrible reputation, because the fear becomes real. You know, the uh-huh. thing is here. The thing I can't afford to have happen is right in front of my face. So yeah, we re-feel it. Okay. So I define karma as beliefs about why things happen, and if we cling to beliefs, we solidify karma in our fields. And then you have this bubble in your energy field, this thing that is not flowing, is not come and go, but exists, and we can recreate awful experiences because we fear them. So, for example, Pluto in the third, I don't have access to education, and I'm disempowered for that, or I feel powerless to learn the truth about something that matters to me. If I believe that the world is unfair because of this, or that other people won't answer my questions because I'm a jerk, or that I don't deserve the truth because I'm told I have a behavior problem or something, right? If I believe anything about it, and that's not what my Pluto is, by the way. Oh my gosh, okay. But if I believe anything about that, that can become solidified as karma, and then I believe it's true, and I manifest it around me. So we talk about Plutonian fears and strengths, you know, skills, and also the fears and the pain from the past. Those fears and that pain are attached to beliefs about the pain. So like if Pluto's in the third night, I believe that other people are keeping me from the truth. I mean, I can create that around me. And so one of the jobs of an evolutionary astrologer, I think, is to zero in as much as a person is able to zero in on this malfunction of belief. And that's kind of where I'm taking this, what I consider evolutionary astrology, where I'm going with this. It's not just enough for me to say, well, yeah, you've been denied education and that's hard, and then to see a tear in your eye. It, like, I want you to see how to change your mind, which is changing belief, which is changing karma, so you can get to the strength of that Pluto in the third, which is empowerment through speaking and learning the truth. And does all that make sense too?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Please be clear if it doesn't, because I tend to move very quickly. I'm trying to be really not doing that, but sometimes I don't catch myself, so I do want you guys to let me know if something isn't clear. Okay. Great. So then moving on to this the basics handout, the first of the two, the shorter of the two. Under notes on Pluto in the chart, assume the person in this life and other lives has experienced the best and worst of the Pluto placement. You know, the part of life, the house, and the way of being, which is the sign. We each fear, number two, we each fear doing what Pluto represents, but we need to do it to feel that life is worth living. So there's this pressure to do it, and often a fear about doing it. Sometimes that fear gets bottled up to the point that we force ourselves to do it, and that's kind of a Plutonian pressure-based, like, evolutionary leap. You know, we can leap into it. Like, I had a friend who had a fear of flying, and she just forced herself to do it, to confront it. And that was, you know, we might look at that as brave and honorable or whatever, but basically the pressure built up so much, she just got tired of it. She got tired of her crap, and so she took the flight and learned how to get over it. And then once we confront the fears, we meet the shadow. That's what we're talking about, an ugly part of us that we don't want to own. I will tell you that Pluto within us, it does represent the survival instinct. And if you take a Plutonian fear far enough, the part, you know, the fear will be articulated as, because I'll die. I would die if I do this. And so, you know, there's this thing about having to look at the part of us related to Pluto that would do anything to survive. And that's ugly. Like, I don't care who you are. I don't care how much you love yourself. If you look at that, it's ugly. We don't think like that. We don't own that. But that's part and parcel of doing, as far as I'm concerned, the good Pluto work with evolutionary astrology. And it's not enough to, like, I know I'm very Plutonian, and not everybody is. I have my sun's in Scorpio, but my Pluto's in the 12th conjunct Venus. It's kind of like, when I look around and see Venus, I'm looking for Pluto at the same time. So I love Plutonian people. You know, it's like, it's just kind of part and parcel of how I feel sane with a Scorpio sun too. But you know, when you're looking at somebody's soul journey, what's left, you know, one of the things that gets left out all the time is this thing that's ugly. You know, this thing of what would I do? And if you get the Soul's Journey 3, you can read about my own experience with that, because I have written about that kind of extensively in the book, and kind of uglier parts that I don't want to own, but kind of giving strategies and anecdotes along with the strategies about how to face the parts that have terrible, unpleasant, unattractive things to say. But yeah, when we see these shadow parts, then this is still on number three here. Then we can move beyond the fear. Now, this is going to be relevant for every human regarding Pluto. It represents fears and also strength. They try to, we usually try to keep away from the fears, to not own the ugly thing, but because we want the fears to go away. They can never go away. The Pluto shadow never goes away. Our relationship with that shadow is what changes. So, okay, our relationship with it is what changes. That's what's really potent here, because we can't avoid. And just part of us. It's just a part of us. Obviously, every chart has every archetype represented, every planet and point. It's just a part of who we are. And so, are there any questions about this kind of broad, big, you know, I just gave you the summary of a bunch of stuff in those books, but are there any questions about that that either came up either as a gap or a dissonance when I was talking, or that you maybe from reading the book you thought, oh yeah, maybe I'll ask him someday? Any questions about this Pluto other life thing and all the karma and the pain and the fear and the shadow? You can feel free to ask anything at this point.
I have a question, Tom.
Yeah.
Are you making any distinction between the shadow and the sort of past life stuff that comes up through our south node, or are those one and the same?
I consider them different. The Pluto thing is the I would do anything to survive, and I have ugly parts. The south node thing for me, as we'll explore next week, has a lot to do with conditioning in a bunch of lives, the environments that we grow up in, and the families we're born to and raised by. So there is nasty stuff in that sometimes, just because we get all this stuff from our families, you know, good and bad. But this is different. I consider the Pluto shadow different than the south node shadow, but they each have shadows. They each
okay.
have things we don't want to look at. Yeah. Yeah. And also, just for everybody, it's helpful if you, because we're not in person, it's helpful if you do share your name when you ask a question. That'll be helpful so we can, so thank
that
you.
That was Tia.
And so who, Tia, thank you. Thank you. I just want to make sure, because I don't know everyone's voices right now. Okay. So this whole thing about looking at a chart and telling a grand story, which is what I do with a client, I start with this very basic approach. And it's sometimes hard when people tutor with me when I say, just pick one keyword for Leo. You know, and they're like, well, how do I pick one? Because there's so many, and people, but you know, beginners don't really study a lot with me. It's usually people who are well-read or gone through other workshops and stuff, and they're like, well, I mean, you know, I know a lot about Leo. And I say, well, just pick one, and I mean, you could pick any one of 100 keywords or more, but just pick one and go with it, and then so you understand the framework. So in this first table, you have the list of houses, and then the life area, which is a word or a phrase, and then the primary fear. And you can just, this is just me picking certain words. And the same with the second table, which is the sign, and then the way of being keyword or phrase, and the major fears associated with that. I've only done Cancer through Capricorn, just as a side note, because those are the people you'll be doing readings for alive on Earth right now. Like, there aren't a lot of people with Pluto and Gemini calling you right now. And once you understand the principles, you can extrapolate it or apply it to all the other signs as well, if you want to. But I want to be more efficient during the class for people you'll actually work with. So what I want you to do when you see Pluto in the first house, you might say body, personality, style, health or exercise or sex, or you might say all of these different keywords. But I want you to practice or play with you picking one keyword. And for this table, I just picked self because it seems to cover, you know, a lot of them. And I want you to understand that this person has a vast variety of experiences, a myriad of experiences in this life and otherwise that have imprinted him or her positively and negatively. And I want you just to assume that right off the bat. When you get into the later step, you can add dimension to it. But this idea is like Pluto in the first. Person needs to be empowered through the self, you know, through being, through this one, being one person. And this person has basically felt powerless about the self in many lives, as well as at different times felt empowered. And you have that mix of skills or strengths and fears all mixed up together. So the primary fear of this is being powerless. being overpowered, because Putin the First would see them, you know, see themselves as the center of everything. Not like, in, you know, the negative judgment on ego out of control, but they are the center of their world, Putin the First. You know, they stand out. They take up a lot of space, and people notice them. So I want you to know that this person, I mean, well, I want you to assume that this person has made choices about the self that stink, that this person has been singled out as plutonium by others because the person stands out. I want you to kind of assume this whole myriad of things, though you don't necessarily know what they're going to say to you or how they've experienced it. And so I want to set you up so that you're looking at a chart and you paint this broad story, like as Steve Forrest would say, it has all the facts, it's completely true, but none of the facts are true. Like it's a real story, but none of it, I can't remember exactly how he says it. I can tell you a true story with made up facts, you know, all the facts are lies. And so the primary fear being powerlessness. And the, you know, and then all the way through the thing. We don't need to walk through them, but we are going to play with examples as we go. So that's the house thing. That's the house thing. I think that the keywords that I have under life area are not just, you know, random keywords, but they kind of sum up a lot of things that that do go with the house, though they're not, of course, exhaustive. So as we let's take a look at this. Take a look at the table, the two columns on the right, and see if there are any questions that jump out or anything about that before we go to the next one and then start playing with these.
This is Starshine.
Yes.
I just have one question about what you just said. You said singled out as plutonium by others. What did you mean by that exactly?
So in the first house, you wear this energy on your sleeve, like you're inhabiting the energy, and you probably don't even know it. And because Pluto in the first house is also, this is not in this table, but it's about independence as well. And okay. So there's this thing where other people can see, you walk into a room and you are Pluto. And we can assume other people react to you as a result.
Okay. Would that be like, yeah, you walk in and people think that you would do anything to survive? Is that what you mean, that kind of thing? Or it
could be any Pluto keyword. But, yeah, that ultimately, yeah.
Okay.
You know, okay. Pluto in the first keywords, or Pluto keywords, honest. I mean, I'm not going to jump all over the map, positive, negative.
Okay.
Honest, cutthroat, jealous, powerful, leadership, like all these different possibilities.
Okay.
Yeah, you have that, right? At the end of your first house.
Yes, I did. That's what I wondered about.
If it's okay if I give that away, yeah, it's okay. Yeah, so it's like you walk in the room, it could be like somebody's like, whoa, we have to take her seriously. Or,
okay,
you know, or she's just got something going on. I don't know what that is, but she's pretty serious and intense. Intense would be another word.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anything else from anybody else on this? Okay. So let's go on to the sign basics. Now the house thing is the part of life, and then the sign is a way of being. So in the house, it would be, what is it that's happening? You know, is it about money? Is it about educating mind? Is it about service? Is it about trust? Is it about surrender? That would be the house stuff. And then the way that that's happening is an adjective to draw from this table. So if that Pluto in the first were in Cancer, that empowerment as self would be an emotional experience. It would happen emotionally and through the emotions. If it were in Leo, there'd be the expression of self would be the primary empowerment nugget or combination. So does that make sense? It's kind of adjective in the second and a kind of a noun in the first table. Does that make sense too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now what I do with this, when I look at a chart, of course, I'm looking at everything in the chart. I mean, I look at the four steps in order. I mean, you know, one at a time. But here's what I do. Pluto's in Virgo in the first. Okay, so it's about the self, and Virgo's about choices or learning humility. So this person has a struggle in many lives about learning humility or being humble, you know, being the person who's humble. And so I don't get into more than that right then. That points at, you know, a book in my head, possibilities, and that kind of comes from experience and just knowing human nature. But when I first do it, that's all I do. Oh, there's a thing about humility and the self. There's a thing in there. And then I will look at the south, and I'm just going to give you this other example now. We're not talking about the south node, but I just want you to see what I'm doing. The south node. The south node is in Pisces in the seventh. So the south node conditioned over many lives by relationship, and that is happening. There's a thing about needing to go with the flow. So that's a lot about the family she comes from, you know. And then the south node ruler, let's say I'm using Neptune. Neptune's in the 10th. Oh, so she herself is interested in reputation. That's a big thing for her. And so I kind of go through that step with these minimalistic keywords just to get a skeleton or a scaffolding going. A scaffolding is actually more appropriate. And then I go back. And that's when it's instructive to look at the second handout. So if you could open that second handout, and we're going to stick with Virgo in the first, that example. So if you could pull up the Pluto expanded handout. And yeah, so then we have the first house. You know, obviously intentionally I made this, you know, more information in here. I don't want you to get bogged down by it. I want you to have it as a tool to understand, you know, how to expand the story. You know, basically I'm kind of talking to you like you're 10 years old, even though I know you're not, trying to give you this tool to start with the basic keyword and then expand it. But in this case, Virgo in the first house, body, person, the life area. You know, body, personality, sexuality, independence, choices. So I don't know what she's going to say to me, but I know that this is the ground it covers. I know that her major fears have to do with making choices, perhaps being alone, perhaps standing out from the crowd, perhaps being singled out. And I know that underneath those fears in the major strength column, transformation through leadership, independence, self-confidence, and clarity about decisions and choices, and an honesty about sexuality. So given that, you know, this stuff is happening in a Virgo way. So let's go down to the signs, which is the beginning of page 3, the Virgo entry. Just for the left-hand column, humble, service-oriented, critical, judging, duty-oriented, hardworking, eager to serve. So we have that it's about herself. And there's a thing about being humble or hardworking, being eager to serve, etc. So that's in my head. That's it. She comes into me and she says, I have this self-destructive pattern, and blah 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 blah. I know where this comes from because we're talking about learning Virgo about herself, responsibility, service about her own body, how to be of service to her own self. I mean, other chart factors will, you know, could influence this, but the deepest stuff is Pluto. And if somebody comes into you and says, "This is a horrible thing in my life," it's probably, you know, chances are it has to do with Pluto, the thing that they're facing. They're working to confront the darkness that they may perceive as very negative, but they're confronting it. If separate example, she might come in, or another possibility, she might come in and say, I have this job where I'm always helping people and I'm burned out. Well, there you go. It's like it's about her first house, and it's about service. It's about being helpful to others. So that takes me to Pluto. So it's like I'm studying her chart. All I know is there's a Virgo first thing happening, and I let all possibilities be open. You know, any astrologer would tell you if you see, you know, at least three hints at some topic, you probably are going to go there. You know, like if it looked like it was about responsibility with Virgo instead of straight service, you know, you just because of other factors, maybe a strong Saturn thing or, you know, about responsibility, you know, you might go that direction. But I keep it wide open because I don't know what she's going to say. and my job is to respond to what she asks me to help her with. So are there any questions or comments on this? And feel free to take a moment and process this, but I want to play with some examples and then give some or play with examples from the tables, and then I want to give possible stories that could fit with it. So take a moment.
Hey Tom, this is Jillian.
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is not about the material, but it's maybe a Virgo critical technical thing, but your voice is kind of breaking up, and I was wondering if anyone else was experiencing that, was hearing that, or if it's my phone.
Yes. Yeah.
Is he breaking up a little bit?
Not for me.
Just a little bit.
This is Mari.
Just a little.
Okay.
Is it prohibitive?
Okay.
Can you listen through it, or is it?
It's definitely listenable. I just wondered if you were moving around, Virgo. It's all about Virgo.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm just I'm just sitting here like a good little person. Okay. thank you for bringing that up.
Okay.
This is not about the material, but okay. Starshine.
Well, I just had one question, and I hope it's not sort of moving ahead, but it helps me to kind of compare things. So you have Pluto in the first, and the person comes in and says that they're having all these problems, and they're related to themselves. So if they had, say, Pluto in the seventh, would they be coming in and you would expect them more to be talking about their relationship to others?
That's right. Okay. Yeah, like I say, not that people with Pluto in the first are solipsistic, you know, like I'm the only person who exists, but they will tend to see stuff coming back to them. Themselves as the source of the Plutonian problem. Yeah. That's a great question. People with Pluto in the second house, they will see their skills and their self-worth as the problem. Third house, their vocabulary, their education level, their confidence in their voice, or their literal voice. People with Pluto in the fourth, their foundation and their family connections and their emotional things. So, yes, they'll kind of perceive that to be the issue. My Pluto's in the 12th, I perceive that the universe and God are the problem. Like, that's my default stupid thing. Where I start before I wake up again. like, people with Pluto in the 10th, my boss, those people who were telling secrets about me. You know, that's how we go with it. Yep.
Okay. Now, so that might sort of represent the object that they're having the problem with, or the environment that's having the problem
with. That's right.
Okay.
That's right, and the house being the part of life, the arena of life.
Okay.
The area of life. Right, exactly. So if you hear, okay, let's just do Pluto in the 10th for just a brief moment, because, any of these would have multiple myriad possibilities. Pluto in the 10th, I just said my boss or the people telling secrets about me. You know, like, those are just two kind of Plutos that, I can personify it. I can throw it on a person, right, which is projection, which is a Pluto keyword too, you know. Or I can see that the workplace is the problem, or I can see that the career I chose is the problem.
Okay.
Or I could say that it's this manager in HR who's giving me the crap about the vacation time. See, I can get very specific and seemingly off course and narrow, but you know it's the 10th house, and it's about work and reputation and career and job.
Okay.
So it's like you got to read between the lines or listen between the lines with whatever somebody's saying. And that's why this approach is, I find it very useful, and some people I teach do too, because it prepares you for just about anything they say if you're willing to translate.
Okay.
Because if you think Pluto in the 10th is about the job, and it's actually about the neighborhood watch association that person is part of, then you miss the mark and you prepare with the wrong idea.
Because it's just the place that they're experiencing Pluto.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Which can be power struggles, secrets, power, power over, power under, all those Plutonian keywords.
Okay.
But yes. Yeah. So other questions before we do some other kind of random examples here.
Yeah, I have a question. If you have somebody, this is Tia. If you have somebody talking about kind of shaming lies and gossip about from people in their neighborhood, is that also going to be the 10th, Pluto in the 10th?
See, now, so that could be different things. That could be definitely different things. Because the neighbor, I mean, it could be a group from the 11th house. It could be the neighborhood from the 3rd house. It could be their reputation in the 10th house. So it could actually be a bunch of different things.
So you just know that by looking at the chart. And
yeah, well, look at the chart and be aware that where Pluto is, you know, let's say that person has, Pluto in the 5th, but something about the nodes, maybe the north node in the 10th. Like, let's just randomly pick that out. We haven't talked about the north node yet at all. But the Pluto thing might be about individuality in the 5th house and self-expression and the right to have an opinion. So it could belong to the part of that. North node in the 10th, they haven't really been out in the world. They might struggle against developing a reputation. They might not know how to do that. So the problem might come from there. So it's kind of like, look at the difference. The north node is what they really don't know how to do, or might always feel like they're on little, like, foal legs, you know, like stumbly little new horsey legs. But the Pluto would be like this thing that just really, really hurts and is really scary and awful. And you talk about the north node with somebody, they probably wouldn't tear up. You talk about Pluto with somebody, they're going to tear up. Like the emotional charge is what we're talking about. Yeah, when we get into the weeks 4, 5, 6, and 7, after we cover these 4 steps, we'll tie that all together, and we'll have multiple opportunities to like, I'll provide you with charts we're going to look at together, and we'll have many opportunities to kind of see where something would be based on, is it a fear-based thing, like a Pluto thing, is it a pull-from-habit thing, like a south node thing, or a kind of, you know, presumptive identity thing, which would be like a south node ruler, or this blind spot, like the north node. That's all very reductive, but we can sort it out by the quality of charge or emotion that the person has. Yeah, we can sort it out. Is it about them? Is it about their world? Is it about their ambition? So kind of like we can sort it all out when we put in all 4 steps. Yeah. Well, I'd love for somebody to volunteer with their own Pluto placement, house, and sign. So somebody can just jump in if you
feel. Maria, I'd love to volunteer.
Okay.
Maria?
Maria.
Maria, okay.
My
Maria.
Pluto is in Leo in the 1st house.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, great.
I'm
so
a Virgo
still in the 1st house.
Sign.
You're a what?
Virgo sun sign.
Okay, great. Okay. So we'll actually leave that out for right now.
Okay.
Okay, good. So again, all this stuff about body, personality, sexuality, independence choices. Now, when I'm looking at your chart, I'm going to go back to that basic handout, and I see the keyword for the 1st house, self.
Yes.
And I go down to the other one, and I see the keyword for Leo, expressive. So the empowerment journey for you hinges on self-expression, like expressive or being expressive about yourself. That's where I start. Now, anything you tell me that happens to fit with Pluto, not everything you could say, because, you know, there are lots of other things happening in your chart and in your emotional field, but anything that would happen to be related to Pluto would fit within this. Now, it could be, I'm afraid to be a cabaret singer, but that's all I've ever wanted. It could be, when I was a kid, I wanted to be I'm just going to give you a bunch of stupid examples or random ones, and then I want you to fill us, you know, give us an idea. You could say, I wanted to be a politician, but I didn't think my opinion mattered. You could say I was bound and determined to paint, and I wouldn't let anything stop me. Right? All these different things about Leo in the 1st.
Yeah.
And so we don't know. It could be a bunch of things because, you know, maybe you've tried on for size, different ways of being and different things. But that's where I start. It's like I have this vast space in my mind that's not filled in with any words, because it's like all those possibilities of Leo in the 1st, and so that's the basic thing. Then when I go on to this other chart in the handout, in the second handout, the extended one or expanded one, Then I'm looking at, you know, major fears being making choices, standing out from the crowd, being singled out, just picking some here. But you also have a strength that comes from self-confidence. And the fears in Leo, you know, that your opinion is overlooked or your warmth is not appreciated, and you might take that very personally. So it's like then I kind of expand it, and I'll imagine you being a seven-year-old in art class who has the most interesting finger painting, but you're afraid to show it to somebody. Or, you know, and then I'll play with all these different images. And then I'll imagine, you know, or you're 7 years old, you have the least interesting finger painting, but you're so proud of it that you can't help showing everybody. You know,
yeah.
Like, I can't help but be Leo. I have to be Leo, you know.
So then I'll
think about different scenarios where getting lost in the crowd is damaging to you. You're in line for some registration for class, you know, at college or high school, and it's like, who are you? And you say, my name is Maria blah, 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 Maria O'Malley, and the person says, no, the seven-digit number that goes with your student record.
Uh-huh.
Right? And you're like, oh. So I just imagine all these horrible Leo things as well as wonderful Leo things, and I play with the images. You know, it's like, if I were doing Leo, how could it go wrong? And that's where my imagination comes into play, and that's where yours is going to, you know, all of you. That's where this astrologer's imagination comes into play. What's Leo about? It's about play. Oh, well, maybe there's some times when she was blocked from playing, and that felt disempowering. Maybe she wanted to be a ballerina, and there was no money for dance lessons, and that would block her first house expression.
Absolutely.
So it's like,
that's true.
Oh, okay. So, right, so I'm painting these, you know, more or less random things. I mean, I'm not even reading you. I'm not intuitive today at all. I'm just like,
yes.
I'm just pulling stuff out. And so I don't know what you're going to say. You might come in and say, I'm an amazing chef but can't get a job. I mean, I'm highly trained and I have 4 degrees and I'm amazing. And I do something, but I can't get a job. Well, I know that you're standing out from the crowd as Plutonian and perhaps they're having a problem not feeling like you fit in. You see how I'm translating that? Do other people see that too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. So if you wouldn't, I want to do this with several of you, but if you, Maria, if you wouldn't mind, like, just what is it about creativity that vexes you or you feel blocked by or how, you know, just kind of give us a couple of sentences on how you respond to what I've told you so far.
Well, when I was young, I was really creative, and I would put my stuff up or whatever, my things off, and went on the bulletin board. I was expressive and warm and everything. And then in the sort of mid, something happened probably when I was about 40 where I got mute, in a sense. Mute, emotionally mute expressively. And it was partly because I wanted to be a good listener. And then it became almost that people wouldn't be interested in me. They wouldn't.
Exactly.
Where I used to be very unique and interesting and kind of offbeat. Yeah. I think I got a little tired of being always on the cutting edge. You know, everything I did was cutting edge. I was the first group of this, the first group of that, and offbeat.
Exactly. So you're standing out from the crowd. So what I want to offer you, like, this will make sense when we're, you know, into like week 5, 6, and 7, but the full picture will make sense. But essentially, you know, the pride in your work and your creativity, the kind of being on the leading edge, the standing out from the crowd, say it that way, because that's the phrase that I happen to include in the table. But that kind of stuff, that warmth and showing who you are is another way to talk about this.
Yeah.
Revealing and showing and celebrating, shining and celebrating who you are. That was in play until something, a life experience probably coincident with a transit or progression, triggered a karmic memory that then you shifted into experiencing that, like something else on the timeline. Because if you'd, up to age 40, if you didn't experience a lot of people ignoring you, that would be a thought of yours or an expectation that might be out of proportion to your experience in this life. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. So, I mean, 40 for you might be, I mean, I'm not doing the math in my head, probably spectacularly, but that might be the beginning of your Pluto square, which would bring your fears up to the surface. Like, what, transiting Pluto squares natal Pluto. That's a possibility around that age. I think people in my Libra generation are mid to late 30s experiencing it, but it would have been different for people in Pluto and Leo, probably early 40s, and that might have kicked in for you then.
Mm-hmm.
That might have kicked in for you then. So it's like, that's what we're talking about. These realities coexist within your field, and they are activated at different times. They're activated through different things. Thank you for that. And then, somebody else with your Pluto thing, I want to do the same exact thing. I want to give you some generic bland things that could apply to a bunch of people, and I want you to tell us kind of how you've experienced that.
Okay, this is Kia. I've got Pluto and Leo in the seventh.
The seventh, okay. So we look at this, if I look at the basic table first, which is always where I start, relationship, right? Empowerment through relationship. And primary fear with that is going to be being powerless, or in this table I have being overpowered within relationship. And in Leo, it's about being expressive. And one way to talk about the seventh house is, now is where I'm expanding it, but that's like where I start. Is representing yourself, like saying, this is who I am. And so the Leo component here can be, being seen as a unique individual within relationship, getting to shine within relationship, and being celebrated within relationship. So then we make the story bigger with the second, with the expanded table. In the seventh house, we have relationships between equals and marriage as the life areas. And the major fears being left or ignored, overpowered by others, failing others, not being respected or paid attention to, fear that relationships are unfair, and codependency. So I know from this, that's all you've told me, and I know we met several years ago at one of those programs, and we had a really great lunch. I remember talking to you and liking your energy field, but I don't know anything about your life other than you live outside of San Diego. And so, like, when I see Pluto and Leo in the seventh, I know that, relationship stuff and having room to celebrate yourself within relationship, and having relationships that offer warmth, for you, and co-creating warmth, between you and others, that's a problem that may dog you. Now, notice I don't say does dog you, I say it may dog you, because you may have figured it out. I also don't know, how much you've gone through and if you've changed your mind and changed the karma along the way. But that's what I know. So I know that sometimes you don't feel listened to. I know that sometimes, at least at certain chapters in life, if not a lot of life, you don't feel that somebody else can see you or respect you. Like, we just know that right off the bat. You may have issues about asking others for what you want. You may have some issues about overgiving to try to be the right kind of person in relationship. Right? This would be a seventh house thing. So anyway, that's kind of where I go with it. And then I think about you as a kid. And I think about, here we go with Leo, something about you that's shiny or worth celebrating. And you might, when you're really young, say, Mommy, look at this thing I made. It may be great until you're age 10, and then, like, something happens in the family and she doesn't have the time anymore to give all that to you. And for her, it's like, well, Tia's growing up, maybe it's not that big of a deal. But for you, it's, like, really hard. So then I imagine you in your first serious relationship. this tableau, just making up these stories about how this might come out. And I might, see in your first serious relationship when you're like, 17, 18 or something and in school and you might find somebody where that Leo thing can finally come out. And I think about how empowering it is for you to say, yeah, here I am, I'm Leo, I'm hot, what do you think? And somebody goes, you're hot. Like that kind of that validation, Leo validation from another person. So kind of play with all these images that way is kind of how I do this. And again, Mario was saying, there are going to be times in life where certain things might be triggered for you. Like, it might have been crappy till you were 30 and then got great. And then it might have been, hard from ages 24 to 38, but then good. So it's kind of like these things get triggered over time, but all these possibilities exist because these things are happening across your timeline, and they have imprinted your emotional field now. So does that make sense to everybody? Kind of like the second set of examples of putting that Leo thing then in the seventh house. Does that make sense to everybody?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So Tia, then like what, you know, you don't have to like do a tell-all on your relationship history, but like, you know, if you could just give us a little bit about that Pluto in the seventh, you know, that like based on what I was saying to you with these broad stories, not knowing anything.
Yeah, it's pretty much the story of my life. A lot of inequality in relationships, and more, much more with me feeling, you know, like I have to be the caregiver, which gives me more power, you know, and it's safer. So
right.
There's been a lot of that in my life, you know, taking
right.
the safe route.
Right.
And being really afraid of any kind of codependency.
Right.
Right. So
cool.
a lot of inequality. And you know,
right,
I'm
right.
slowly as I get wiser, slowly learning how to
mm-hmm.
Have a dialogue with people to change that. But that's really
Perfect.
Been a major theme in my life.
Perfect. See now, again, now when I'm looking at Tia's chart, I don't know her. She just called and booked a reading or whatever. You know, I just know I'm talking to her on Tuesday or whatever. When I look at that, I don't know if she – I mean, she might be in right now in a Plutonian abusive relationship where she never gets to open her mouth. She might be somebody who is, you know, separately, another example, she might be in a wonderful, creative, vibrant relationship where each person celebrates the other and the partnership. You know, so it's like I don't know where she is. But I have to assume she's learning over time. So like you just said, you know, I'm learning how to ask these questions and make these statements to, like, help change that. But that's another thing to keep in mind. We don't know how people live the charts. And it's just all these possibilities. But figure, in some life, she's dominating somebody in relationship, Pluto in the seventh, and in other lives, she's being dominated. In some lives, she's making all the decisions. That's a gentler vision, gentler image. And in some lives, somebody else is making decisions for her. We know that that's true across the timeline in all these lives, at least once somewhere, because the Pluto thing for each person is to explore all these possibilities, sometimes extremes, but to cover a full range of it, of empowered and disempowered. So thank you, Tia. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So let's pick somebody who has Pluto in Virgo and not the first or the seventh. House. Does that work for anybody? I don't.
Well, I guess I have Pluto and Virgo in the eighth.
Okay.
This is Jillian.
Virgo.
Yeah.
Jillian, okay, thank you. So when we do this, and then I want to do this together. I want to, like, bounce these off together and have us construct the story together. Again, I don't think you're 10 years old, but I want to start at the basics to kind of get an idea of how to do this story. So eighth house. Let's go to the simple table, the short table. The eighth house, I have trust here, with a primary fear being about abandonment. And then we have Virgo in the second table below. Way of being with Virgo is humble, and a major fear is being kept small. So here we have situations that involve trust, which, you know, eighth house, we know that's intimate relationships, et cetera, but all kinds of things about trust where she might fear being kept small within the eighth house. And that's just where I begin with it. And then I go back to this other table, eighth house, and then this life area of the expanded table, bonding, intimacy including sex, shared resources, power within relationship. So, you know, I'm going to basically assume before I meet this person, stuff that's happening in the second column, major fears, you know, that she's being abandoned, that she's being lied to, perhaps abused, perhaps being the one who does those things in certain circumstances, destructive codependency, dealing with secrets and subtext, the loss of trust. So I'm just assuming the worst there, and then I know that the best is in there. I know that she can transform, and that's the third column, major strength, or the fourth one, transform through looking into the depths of the human heart, reinventing partnership to reflect deep needs and realities, you know, creating balanced relationships through trust. So I know she has that capability, but also the fears on top of it. And the Virgo thing, I'm going to add in this keyword of responsibility and, hold on, let me pull up that page. You know, responsibility, improvement-oriented, critical, judging, hardworking, eager to serve. So all that stuff is in there. Because we're talking about relationships where power between people matters, the shared resources and intimacy, you know, I'm gonna assume that at certain times, you know, sometimes there's an echo of the seventh with the idea of being controlled by another that we're talking about with Tia. And in the eighth house, it can be this kind of there's an edge to it, and the deep psychological motivations and hidden truths are what dominate in the situation. So somebody's unseen motivations are what, you know, Jillian might feel controlled by or kept small by. That's just the kind of overall picture. I happen to know Jillian very well. She's actually my partner. Like she said, she lives with me. So, and I've worked with her chart obviously considerably, or considerable amount. Have worked with it considerably. I've worked with it quite a bit. But that's kind of what I look at with that. And so for you, you know, like control within relationship, or what it takes to create a power balance, which in reality becomes a give and take of just, you know, trust to people, but through trust and through, you know, all the hidden things becoming seen. So if you want to give us a sentence or two about, you know, about kind of your experience with that a little, again, that doesn't have to be a tell-all or whatever, but yeah.
Sure, yeah. Well, and then not to jump ahead, but also my south node is in the eighth house too. And then eighth house, of course, is an echo of Pluto and, you know, being Scorpio, you know, it's a Plutonian house.
Exactly.
So I know a lot about that. But, yeah, I mean, and I, so for those of you who don't know, I was in a marriage for a very codependent marriage for a while before I met Tom, and so I've been dealing with issues of codependency for a long time, and in feeling empowered within relationship, and definitely dealt with issues of trust, learning to relax and trust another person. That's the short story.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So I mean, you might come in and say, "I'm in a codependent marriage," and I'll be like, "Right, the Pluto and Virgo in the eighth." You also might come in and say, "I always feel like I'm helping my partner. I always feel like I have to serve my partner, or I always feel like I'm responsible for the chores, you know, the shared resources, shared responsibility, or I'm always the one who organizes the bills or cleans the hamster cage or whatever it is." Like, you might feel that incredible imbalance in the power thing. So it's like, but again, like, you know, I'll just assume that before I even talk to you. And that's kind of where we're coming from with this. So that's three examples. I hope that's not beating a dead horse for you guys. But that's just kind of how I approach this first thing. And for examples, other people will do other classes, like other examples. So just remember if you spoke up tonight or not. But I want to pick just other kind of random examples. Like, I want somebody to pick a random house, and then we'll do a sign. And I want to build it from scratch by looking at this first table, the basics table.
Six.
Yeah, anybody, just pick a house.
Six.
Ninth house.
Six. Okay, let's do six. Service. Okay, good. Service. And then somebody else pick a sign from the list below, the seven signs below.
Libra.
Libra. Okay, great. So six house. Okay, good. So we talked about this idea of service with the fear being stuck in service, right? And then this general Libra thing, the way of being, I should have written, instead of balanced, I should have written attempting to find or create balance. So that's the glaring mistake for me on this handout. But then the major fear being lack of fairness. So we're talking about the fears of a lack of fairness through being stuck in service. That's the landscape. That's the landscape. So I'd love to hear from as many of you want to chime in, but no pressure. Just, you know, what might that, how does that work in life? Like, what would a fear, a lack of fairness through being stuck in service, what could that look like? And it could be completely random, your image. But, like, I want to just play verbally with this and start to flow some ideas.
Well, maybe a woman who's caring for her family, who has some really excellent skills, and they're not being expressed because she's kind of stuck serving her family.
Exactly.
Would that
Thank
be
you.
An example?
Great.
Okay.
That's wonderful. Yeah, exactly. She's got skills, but she's stuck in service, and so yeah, she might not be. Yeah, yeah. So let's do. Let me just ask you questions to kind of draw this out. What is somebody who's heavily Libra need? Like, what's a need for a Libra person?
A partner to mirror them and see them.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. And so, how would that be a problem in the sixth house? Like in a sixth house context of service or work or duty, how would that be a problem? How could that be a problem? Any possibilities?
Because it's not equal? The relationship's not equal?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. You jumped over to the other table, kind of, which is perfect. So let's look at this expanded table of the houses, of the sixth house. Thank you. Thank you, Mary. Yeah, there's this thing about the sixth house. The last life area in the sixth house to have is unequal relationships. So Libra needs that partner to reflect, needs equality, or at least to figure out how to do that. But in the sixth house, it's unequal. So there's a natural there can be a problem there. Now, it can be wonderful, too. But nobody's going to come in to you and say, you know what, I'm a woman who takes care of my family, but my family, they're so responsive. And I say, you know what, I need a weekend off. And they do all the chores and walk the dog. You know, nobody's going to come into you, complaining about that for a session. So it's okay to assume the worst while including possibilities of the good things, too. But there you have trying to get equality through this thing that's automatically unequal. So that's another way that comes out. And does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Not just what we said, but that thought process. You know, does the thought process clear?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Yes.
So is all of this is any of this just here's my Libra thing checking in because I want to make sure that I'm making this as valuable to you as possible, given my my mission or whatever, my goal, my intentions. So it sounds like all of this is making sense. Is this stuff that you already feel like you have under your belt, or are you learning something here? And it's kind of a stupid, it might seem like a stupid question, but I want to make it as valuable as possible. Since our first time together, I'm just getting to know kind of the chemistry of the group.
The thing I always find the hardest, the thing I find the most difficult is,
uh-huh.
You know, like Libra in Virgo is quite tricky for me. Like,
uh-huh.
When the house and the sign don't seem to sort of match in any way. You know, before we were talking about the first house on Leo.
Right.
You know, like, I always have a bit of an issue when
okay.
they don't seem to match. Like, a fire energy and a fire house kind of works. But say that had been, which I've got, like, the Virgo in the first house. Sometimes I have a
uh-huh.
bit of a, that's what I have problems. That's where.
Well, okay, good. So I'll invite you to.
The Libra in the sixth
shift
house,
how you look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so shift how, so you're looking at the fire house, but, you know, the stuff in that house is happening in a Virgo way.
Yes.
Or in this case, this Virgo house is happening in a Libra way. So the service,
yes.
It's why I tend not to say the sixth house is Virgo. That's kind of why
right.
I do that, because it naturally leads us to get maybe a little confused sometimes by, you know, by that, because, well, how would Libra do Virgo? But it's really how would Libra do service.
Right, yep.
And all the parts of life that involve learning through humility or sacrificing ego or back-burnering individual priorities. You know, how
right.
would, which would be a sixth house kind of thing, it's happening in a Libra way, trying to get validation, looking for reflection, looking for fairness. something like that. So that's kind of, and the way that these tables are broken down is meant to kind of bypass that. So so it might be helpful for you to just kind of switch those vocab words. You know how those work.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. So what I want you to do with this handout during the week is play with different things. Look at, I'll be sending you charts. I don't know. Either for next week or the following week, we're going to start playing with things and putting them together with actual charts. But for now, look at charts you know. Look at charts you know and be very reductive. You know, be reductionistic. Look at it, and you know, you maybe you know of your family member or your spouse, partner, or a coworker, or your dog if you have the dog's chart or whatever. But you just look at it, and instead of looking at all the things you can look at, focus on Pluto as the marker of the soul's journey, as this empowerment thing, and start with that two keyword approach. You know, the adjective noun, like in the Libra sixth house thing. Fairly, or trying to approach service through. But create fairness or something like this. I didn't do that right, but and that's kind of what I want you to do with it and play with it. I want you to make stories. It's easy when you know the person. That's kind of why I wanted to use, you know, some examples from the group, so you could chime in and say, oh yeah, well that's you know I always wanted to be a ballerina or whatever it was. but that's kind of the goal of this, for you to play with it, but to start with the two keyword approach and two key phrase maybe approach, and then expand it through, you know, your imagination. So you might know two people with, you might know more, a bunch of people with Pluto and Leo. But look at one person. It might seem to be about art. And the other person, it might seem to be about opinion. Each of those are self-expressive. So each of those is valid. So I want you to be able to see the broad truth even when you're dealing with specifics. And does that make sense? Okay, right on. So are there any questions or comments about this? I mean, we can keep doing this, but I have a feeling, I think we probably should, but I also have a feeling that some of the best benefit will come from you playing with it on your own this week and doing this kind of imagination exercise. What is it? Okay, so here I'm dealing with this, you know, 40 or 50-year-old person, and this person might say a bunch of different things. Well, you know, Pluto and Scorpio in the second. Well, a person couldn't be 40 or 50, but let's say Pluto and Scorpio in the second. I guess I'll choose some examples now. We'll do it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it like? Well, what is the basic journey? So going to the simple table, put in the second, survival, with the fear being lack of resources leading to death. That's what that little sideways apparent smiley face is. It's actually an arrow. as you Scorpio... The way of being is about openness and vulnerability, and the major fear is about being revealed and thereby hurt. So it's kind of like, you know, this issue of survival, being vulnerable to the possibility of death. That is a huge part of that soul's journey. So then when we shift into this longer table, second house life areas, self-worth, values, skills, money, and possessions. And all of that's going to be approached in a Scorpio way, which from the table at the bottom, intense, deeply emotional, truthful or taboo, socially unacceptable, seductive, honest, dishonest, secretive, magical, alchemical. So skills are going to be approached that way. And so this person might come in and say, this person could be, you know, the oldest in the generation, so 1984, I don't know, almost 30 years old. I can do math today. But that person might come into you and say, you know, I studied mechanical engineering in college because I felt like that would be a great way to earn a living and I'd be stability, could raise a family, whatever, achieve my life goals, blah, 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 whatever. But I really think that I am an acupuncturist or an exotic dancer. I think that's what my heart is. I mean, it could be anything, right? I really think that I'm actually a magician. I really think that I'm actually a shaman. And so it's kind of like you have this thing that they might be afraid to be vulnerable about what's truly important to them, second house, the value system. And that fear of vulnerability might have steered them towards skills that they don't appreciate and that don't work for them. So you know, I don't know what the person's going to say. The person might say, I truly feel in my heart that that my path is as an exotic dancer working for a dollar bill stuffed into my crotch. That person might say that, and I can't judge. There's no judging that, because it's like Pluto in the second, or, you know, Pluto and Scorpio in the second. There's something scorpionic about the value system. You know, money in my crotch. There's pretty scorpionic about my value system. But anyway, sorry, I'm a second house Scorpio, so you know, whatever, I think I'm funny. But anyway, so you have this, you know, this scorpionic thing that needs to happen with the value system. So to extend that story, you know, why would a person feel afraid or not willing to be vulnerable to expose his or her value system? Come up with a bunch of different things. Maybe the family is very conservative. Maybe the person was born in the Bible Belt to a family that was very emphasizing a traditional kind of Christian religion, or was born into a Muslim family that's very traditional. Maybe the person was born in another country. Maybe the parents moved, you know, to another country. You know, maybe you meet an American whose parents were born elsewhere, and that kind of tradition comes through. But the truth of the person's value system is the problem. And in some lives, that person's going to be disempowered through revealing that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Be disempowered through revealing that. Yeah. And look, Mom, I'm an exotic dancer. And Mom says, gather all your brothers together because we're going to run you out of town. Mm-hmm. I need a posse. You know, like something really not cool, something disempowering about the value system. That probably does affect survival. And the other thing about Pluto in the second, it's also safe to assume that somebody has died of starvation. That's not across the board, but it's part of the disempowerment through lack of resources and all the stuff that goes with that. And so you might actually be dealing with somebody who actually died. You know, the problem led to death, whether through starvation or, you know, being run out of town and ostracized or isolated or shunned or something. Yes.
Excuse me, Tom, this is Tia. You were tying that died of starvation to Scorpio, or Scorpio in the second house?
Yeah, to Pluto in the
second house.
Specifically.
Pluto in the second house. Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm. And then you get all this karma, this chain of beliefs about, oh, I didn't gather the right skills, or I didn't put the right price on my skills, or I didn't believe in myself enough to have enough, you know, business to buy bread to survive. You know, this whole chain of stuff that is about self-worth and values and self-esteem, but it's ultimately about the survival with Pluto in the second. Mm. Ultimately about survival, yeah. The Scorpio thing is the empowerment or disempowerment and the intensity surrounding the problems with the self-esteem. Yeah, the self-worth. Yeah. I'm kind of intentionally stretching into these other generations too, because so I want to do Pluto in Sagittarius in the 10th house. So we already talked about the 10th house with something else. Pluto in Sagittarius in the 4th house. So Pluto in the 4th, starting there, you know, we know it's about family. We know it's about home, say it that way. And the fear is about, let me go back to the simple table, not belonging. So there's something that the person will have experienced in a bunch of lives where this fear of not belonging comes up. And that's going to imprint them, even if they're accepted in this life. The Sagittarius, optimistic or in the fear might be believing the wrong thing, but shifting into that other table in the 4th house, or the Sagittarius in the longer table. Optimistic, expansive, jovial, open to new experience, intuitive, boundless. You know, Pluto in the 4th, this person might relate to his or her emotions in a jovial way, but there might be a block to that within the family system. The person could be disempowered or feel powerless to honor the breadth or scope of his or her inner world within family. A lot of the people with Pluto and Sagittarius, they're younger people, but a lot of them have issues over many lives with belief, believing the wrong thing, or taking too many risks, that kind of thing, or excesses, you know, sometimes with pleasurable things. But it has to be big. Pluto in Sagittarius wants to be big. It's Pluto in Jupiter's sign. And in the fourth house, the emotions. So we can imagine if the emotion, if, you know, for the person to be empowered through emotions, you know, to be big, in the family system, other people could have been bigger. It's the fourth house with Pluto there. Disempowerment through the family and how big the emotions are. So that's like one example. One example. The person could also indulge in emotions in a way that leads to a loss of confidence and power too. Basically being, you know, so hyper emotional. Jupiter ruling the house of the house of the moon with Pluto there, that the person might have a problem maintaining close connections with others because of the intensity of emotion and or the beliefs about emotion and things like this. Yeah. Yeah. So I'd love for you this week to play with these images. And I want you to keep in touch with your email if you want. Ask questions. Let me know what you're coming up with. Let me know if you seem to have a block about a certain archetype or a house or a sign or if the exercise in general seems like a block to you. Let me know and keep in touch because I'm trying to keep the class time short, but there is quite a lot of material. I'm happy to be available to email, and I probably, you know, will want to turn around and tell the class, you know, tell the rest of the participants the answer too, just in case it's helpful to somebody else who might not have thought of the question. So I want you to play with this and keep in touch this week and let me know how it goes. And if you want, if you want feedback, pick a couple of examples and do it in terms of, you know, how I've been doing it, which is just this simple keyword thing and then a few more keywords and then some possibilities and some images of, you know, what would Virgo in the fifth look like with feeling powerless? You know, what would Capricorn in the seventh look like feeling powerless versus empowered? Does that make sense to you? You guys
yeah.
willing to take that on and play with
mm-hmm.
that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And again, the rest of the charts are relevant. So you can pick up charts you know. Don't ask me questions about your chart because that kind of opens up the intuitive door and, you know, we're not doing sessions. But feel free to say, what about, you know, blah, blah, blah. I know we talked about three of yours tonight, but feel free to do that and just play around for size. And then when you get my answer, look at other people you know with Pluto in the same house and or sign. You might not know somebody with, you know, Pluto in the same house and sign as you. I know, like, I think, like, a couple other people, but most of them are actually clients over the years with the same as mine. You may or may not, but you'll know other people in your generation, you know, and you'll know other people. You'll have charts somewhere in your library, probably, of different people. And if you don't, go to Celebrity Charts. Scan astrotheme.com or astro.com because you can just look at somebody and say, oh, yeah, you know, I saw an interview and I've seen several movies or whatever that person, or I have the albums. I'm familiar with that person's kind of energy. And you can do it with that as well if you don't want to do it with people you know. So, yeah, so are there any questions or comments before we finish up here? I want to make sure all this makes sense to you. Yeah.
This is Starshine again.
Yes.
I had one more question before we find out.
Yes.
So how would you sort of tease out the difference between Pluto and Scorpio if you had Pluto and Scorpio? Is it just sort
mm-hmm.
of Pluto more emphasized or Scorpio more emphasized? Or how do you distinguish between those when they're together?
Oh, okay. So first, they do distinguish them. I always make sure to do that. Just like Jupiter and Sagittarius is not, you know, it's not, it might be less dilute or less modified. That might be one thing to say about it. Because it's, you know, Pluto working through Pluto's lens. But look at Pluto as this empower, you know, this the what, right? The thing in your psyche. The empowerment journey, the thing you're trying to get done to feel strong and confident. That also has fears, dragged along or tied to it, you know, ball and chain fears or whatever. And then look at Scorpio as the way that empowerment is and is not happening. That's what you do. So it's not that it's pure. You might say it's less dilute because it's like working through its own lens, but it's still Pluto, and it's still happening in a Scorpio way. It might be useful for you to play with this table and be, you know, look like Oh, Pluto and Virgo. Oh, humble, service-oriented, this is the goal. Pluto and Libra, kind, generous with others, that's the goal. Pluto and Scorpio, intense, deeply emotional. It might help for you to make sure you're comparing and contrasting, because I don't want you to get confused by that. You know, I don't want you to mix them together.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Does it answer the question?
Yeah, I think I'll think on it.
Okay.
Think about what you said.
Yeah, and you can apply that to Saturn in Capricorn and Sun in Leo. It's like a planet, a what, happening through a lens. How is this planet happening? That's the idea. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So does everyone understand the task ahead of you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Great. Okay. And feel free to, you know, plagiarize the table if you don't want to use your own things. But, I mean, you can come up with your own phrases if I've left. I mean, I've, of course, left a ton of things out. So if you're, like, looking at Virgo and whatever, you come up with another keyword you'd rather use, definitely use that. Like, don't feel locked into the table, but I've tried to, in the expanded table, I've tried to provide you with a bunch of different options. And it's okay to pick, you know, one at a time, like, you know, Libra in the sixth, like, seeking kindness through service, or seeking to be political through being humble, or so, you know, something like you can mix and match with it. But I want you to play with the possibilities and think about different possibilities. So good. Good.
Okay.
Any other questions before we hang it up now?
Nope. This has been great, Tom.
Oh,
yeah.
Good to hear. Because I don't. Part of me is like, maybe they know all this stuff already. So I'm like,
no.
That's why I asked you like 15 minutes ago. Is this useful? Are you learning anything?
We're listening.
Okay. Good. And the one person who's not saying anything is like, yeah, I knew all this. That's fine. Okay. So what's going to happen is so in closing, I'll say I want you to get familiar with some of these core things, but you don't have to memorize everything. Just make sure that you have at least a keyword or two handy for each sign or house, whether it's my keyword or yours. But have it handy, because as we go through the course, we're going to be building a four-step story drawing on each of these tables, building a four-step story. And like next week, we're going to do a recap just if you have any questions about Pluto that might not have gotten emailed during the week, and how to work with that and how to make this kind of broad, you know, broad thing to start with, this broad picture. And then we're going to get into the South Node, and then we're going to play with adding them together. Oh, Pluto's in Libra in the 12th, this is the soul's mission. Oh, South Node's in Cancer, that's mine, Cancer in the 10th, this is what the family was about. So it's like we're going to be building this story and then doing a bunch of examples in the last 3 weeks. So just keep in mind that keep these handy too and get familiar with how to use them too. So thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, everybody. This was great for
thank
me.
You.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you to play with me. You're welcome. And same dial-in number next week. So use the same dial-in number next week at the same time. And if you can't make it, you'll get the recording and you can ask email questions, and so it's all good. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, everybody. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.